Okay, let's talk to Nick Bunker on WGN. Nick, it's John Williams. Welcome to the show. You are the Economic Research Director for North America at Indeed Hiring Lab. We want to talk about the U.S. labor market. We appreciate you joining us.
Sure thing. Thanks so much for having me on.
So what's the headline? We know the numbers are going down. Has it gotten as bad as it's going to get, or are they getting even worse in terms of job applications, job postings?
Yeah, so what we saw in the jobs report last week was an unemployment rate we haven't seen since the Great Depression. But those numbers really only capture what was happening in the middle of April. Since then, we've seen still millions of weekly unemployment insurance claims, and we're also seeing, at least on Indeed, that job postings are still growing much slower than they were at this point last year. So while the data for April were dire, I think we should all be prepared to see some even more traumatic numbers in the May report.
Yeah, we don't have the March report yet. Is that what you're saying? March.
Oh, pardon me, you said April.
Yeah. So when do the May numbers come out then? I guess 1st of June. Is that how that works?
It'll be the first Friday in June, which I believe is the 3rd.
And you are expecting that to be even worse than what we are seeing this month?
Yeah, exactly. We've, you know, in the weeks since the unemployment rate was last measured, we've still seen, you know, unemployment insurance claims around 3 million a week. And those are numbers that are slightly lower than what we've seen at the peak during this crisis, but they're still, you know, 14 to 16 times higher than what we saw before the crisis.
So the Indeed Hiring Lab, I mean, so what you are tracking are job postings, which is related to but is not the same as the unemployment numbers, right?
That's correct. So we've been keeping an eye on job postings because that's a pretty good indicator of what's going to happen to hiring. And the numbers we've seen is just a tremendous rise in the number of people without a job. But to get to a better economic situation, we need to see hiring pick up. So we're looking at postings on Indeed to get a sense of what the outlook for hiring is.
Right.
And unfortunately, while the deterioration seems to have leveled off, things still aren't looking great when it comes to the hiring outlook.
Right. So before those people get jobs back, we have to have jobs for them to go back to. So your numbers would be a little preliminary maybe to the actual unemployment numbers then, right?
Exactly. So the numbers that we have for the unemployment rate were measured in the middle of April, and we have job postings data through last week, and we continue to update those every week so we have a more real-time sense of what's happening in the labor market.
Could it have been worse? I mean, at least we do have stimulus. The government is doing everything they can to support employers. Do you have any sense that in terms of job postings, the stimulus packages are helping?
So it's hard for us to really tell with our data since we really only look at data from 2014 on, so we don't have other recessions to keep an eye on. But I do think that the labor market in general is, you know, in a better place than it would have been absent any government intervention in terms of policy. I think one thing that's important to note is that pretty much all of the increase in the unemployment rate in the latest data were folks on temporary layoffs. So lots of folks are on unemployment insurance, which has been increased with generosity, and there's a likelihood in an optimistic outcome where those folks are recalled to their previous employer in the near future.
Well, that's an interesting point. So is it possible, Nick, then, that while these job postings numbers don't look good, that's an understatement, maybe they aren't as bad as it would appear because a lot of those jobs represent furloughed workers for whom those positions will be recalled. In other words, there's not the need for additional job postings. They're holding those jobs for the people that aren't working right now. I'm looking for a silver lining here, Nick.
Yeah, and I think there is a possible silver lining in that folks who are in temporary layoff could be recalled. The issue, however, is that temporary could turn into permanent if we don't see an economic rebound in the near future. Yeah. So there is, in one sense, it's an optimistic read of the situation that folks could return to work quickly, but then we also do know that there's likely to be some workers who aren't going to return to old jobs, so postings are important to track to get a sense of what's going to happen to additional hiring.
I just did this, and I probably shouldn't have, Nick. We're visiting with Nick Bunker, Economic Research Director for North America at Indeed Hiring Lab. You've heard about them, and they're regular guests here. The markets aren't reacting wildly to the president's announcement of this Manhattan Project-style warp speed task force to find a vaccine. But sometimes that does happen on the news out of the White House or maybe at Smith Glaxon or someplace like that. Suddenly the markets react in a very positive way. I guess it's too much to expect a reaction this quickly, but it does sort of hinge on that, doesn't it? None of this happens until the market has confidence that we're either going to have a vaccine or some sort of medicine that's going to moderate the effects of the disease, right?
And I think that's true of the labor market as well, that you could see some easing of social distancing regulations, but if people don't feel comfortable to go out and be consumers and patrons of businesses, businesses aren't going to see the same number of revenues and won't be able to either recall laid off workers or hire new ones if economic activity doesn't bounce back. So many of these questions about the economic outlook are really hard to parse and sometimes feel like they're better posed to epidemiologists than economists, to be honest.
That's interesting. One last quick thing, though. Is there a part of the country or a part of the economy that jobs are that you're most optimistic for people? Like if I'm transitioning right now or entering the labor force, should I move somewhere or try and find a job in a certain sector?
So I think the unfortunate fact is that pain is, spread across a variety of, geographies and job titles. But I do think there are some areas that are holding up slightly better than others. Healthcare, particularly nursing, that's where one area that's holding up. But I also think there's specific retail jobs that are some glimmer of hope in this labor market, particularly when it comes to groceries. Grocery store associates are a type of job that seem to have held up, though they, that's not a huge section of the labor force.
Yeah, maybe it's not going to move the needle entirely. Nick Bunker is the Economic Research Director at Indeed. Nice to talk to you, Nick. We'll visit again in a week or so. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
12:35 on WGN Radio. John Williams on the Wintrust Business Lunch as we continue now with Dale Buss, veteran financial journalist from the Midwest. He's a contributing editor, chief executive, New Nutrition Business Magazine, and CPGMatters.com. Dale, so is your area food, or what area do you generally report on then?
It's a big specialty of mine. I mean, being in the Midwest and born and raised and living, I try to specialize in things that are important to the people here, so food. Food processing, the food business, one of them. Obviously, we've talked about the automotive and manufacturing business as well.
Right. Well, Orion Samuelson and I have talked a lot on this radio station about the fact that there's plenty of food in the production chain, but we can't get the food processed when it gets to, say, a processing plant. We have a sort of a bottleneck there. Can you sort of give me an update on where we are on all of that and what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. This is such a strange thing. You know, even as we try to get the economy on the road back to normal, there's this huge sign of how abnormal things really are and are going to be, and it's happening in the meat case at Jewel and other supermarkets. People haven't maybe noticed it so much yet, but in the coming weeks, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. So you've got this, as you said, the supply chain is severely crimped. You've got processing plants going down and coming back up that process beef and pork especially. So you've got these scenes of thousands of hogs literally, quite literally now, being put through shredders to serve as compost because there's not much else that the people who are raising them can do with them because of the choke up in the processing plant. Meanwhile, you've got Tyson and other food meat companies being accused of price gouging on the prospect of shortages. So it's all very dislocated, but what is going to end up happening is there are going to be some spot shortages, there are going to be higher prices, there are going to be huge losses on the farm as suppliers, you know, are not going to be able to make it. The big food processors, most of them in the Midwest and certainly flyover country generally, are ultimately going to be okay, but they're the source of the bottlenecks, and a lot of it has to do, obviously, with a lot of COVID-19 cases being transmitted in the factory setting where people are in close proximity.
Didn't the president order them to open back up? Are they, in fact, running those plants now?
Yes, but they are having to do so still with the safety protocols in place. So they're doing the best that they can. So, for example, JBS, a big processor, has, I think, 6,000 people on the sidelines right now because they are 60 years of age or older. So they're at the highest risk for COVID-19, while at the same time, the company is hiring another 1,000 people for its factories just to keep them clean and safety and health compliant. So it's just a strange brew of things, you know, going on in the meat business these days, and consumers will be seeing even more of the results.
Mm. Yeah, because we do sometimes see those shelves get thin or those coolers get thin, but other times, and that's kind of interesting to me too, Dale, that my father was telling me that at the store he goes to, they were virtually out of a lot of the meat products he would have purchased. There was a lot of empty space. The same weekend, I was at grocery stores near me, and there was no evidence of any, you know, shortage at all. Can you explain that?
Well, because it's spotty and it's all over the place, and plants are going up and down at the same time, or they're going down for a couple of weeks and coming back up, you know, partly because of President Trump's order. The other big thing at work here is that these plants are so huge. You know, there are individual plants, Tyson and others, operate that supply, you know, 5, 10, 15% of a total supply of, say, pork or beef in the country. So when you have a COVID-19 related problem there and that plant is shut down for 1, 2, or 3 weeks, it just creates a huge hole. Well, then where the holes are in the supermarket depends on the supermarket's own distribution systems and all of that. So I just think there's no way to predict until you go through the doors of your supermarket what you're going to find there right now.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, maybe once upon a time, these vast centralized locations were an efficient way to process food. I wonder if they're going to rethink that in the future, too. It does make your whole supply very vulnerable to a single outbreak, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, there, of course, there's the whole farm-to-table movement. And I personally, my family and I have been working with a farm in northern Michigan where we get a lot of our meat, and we have had no problem, you know, obtaining the supply that we need. You know, you might see more sort of boutique or entrepreneurial ventures of that sort. I just don't think for mass consumption there's any way to replace, the Tyson plant, for example.
And your expectation is that we're going to see shortages beyond what we've seen so far, spotty, and we'll also see higher prices, correct?
Yeah, I think that's what the industry is indicating. And while individual consumers may not see that in particular in their supermarkets now, I think it's going to be a sort of a through the summer kind of thing that we'll be dealing with, and of course, right in time for prime grilling season. So that's going to upset some people.
Well, and imagine, too, I mean, part of the reasons that some of the farmers were turning their crops over was because the market was gone at restaurants and cafeterias. Schools are closed and restaurants aren't open. As restaurants start to open up, how will that impact this situation?
It'll certainly increase demand, obviously, but I think the expectation is that as restaurants open up, that's going to only happen gradually. And then, of course, the wild card is how many people are actually going to go out to eat, for example. And let's say everybody wants to go out to eat. The restaurants are going to have to throttle their own business by enforcing social distancing, which, you know, might cut by half the number of people they can actually have
on a site. It would also increase the demand for these products, so I would imagine it would make maybe the shortages more acute at stores or the prices higher for everybody.
I think it's going to increase pressure, but I don't see restaurants emerging as a huge factor, you know, maybe for another few weeks or a month or so.
Yeah. at least not in Illinois. Boy, that's for sure. Dale Buss is the veteran financial journalist. You read him in, among other places. Is Chief Executive the name of the place where we read you, Dale?
Yeah, Chief Executive Magazine. It's at chiefexecutive.net online. It's also in print. Most CEOs in the country read it. And I contribute to these food magazines and Forbes.com as well.
Nice to talk to you again, Dale. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing. It's 12:41, almost 42 now. This is WGN. It's time for a Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Chicago Inno says new data shows that among the heartland cities in the U.S., Chicago leads in the amount of venture capital flowing through its homegrown startups. America's Mighty Middle report shows that over the past decade, Chicago leads the region's VC funding at $15.2 billion. Followed by Austin and then Denver. German real estate ventures purchased the Fulton Market District office building at 905 West Fulton Market for a whopping $85 million. Crane says that's a record for a Chicago office building. And earlier this week, we told you that Boeing CEO said he thought a major airline could go bankrupt because of the pandemic. That didn't sit well with American Airlines CEO Doug Park, and he called Boeing CEO David Calhoun to tell him just that. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Okay, Orion Samuelson, what are you looking at?
Well, just to enlarge a little bit on your previous conversation, Tyson Foods temporarily closing two plants in North Carolina for cleaning because of the COVID pandemic. The Tyson Foods spokesman said in an email, one of two fresh meat plants and a food service plant at the Wilkesboro complex are closed through Tuesday of next week. As the spread of the COVID-19 disease among meatpacking plant workers continues to grow, and so we have to take plans to sanitize those plants and get them back into production, and at the same time not endanger the lives of the workers at those plants. The grain market today, the July wheat contract is trading at $4.99¼. The July corn contract is trading at $3.20½. That's up a penny a bushel. And the July soybean contract trading higher, up 3¼¢. That puts it at $8.40¼ a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The July lean hog contract is down 92 cents a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract is up $2.40. And the May feeder cattle contract is up a dollar, trading at $124.80. The biofuel industry, particularly ethanol, has been hit hard by the lowered driving taking place in this country. But apparently we could be starting to turn the corner on the ethanol production. I think today there are about 140 ethanol plants that are shut down or operating at smaller capacity because of the lower demand for the ethanol product, but maybe that's just beginning to turn around. And this weekend, a lot of farmers markets will be opening in various communities across the Midwest. I know mine here in Huntley, Illinois, is opening Saturday, and when you go to a farmer's market this year, you're going to have to follow some rules that you haven't followed before. So make sure you're aware of what's required from a sanitation standpoint and from a gathering standpoint and follow those rules, but get out, because the weather has been pretty good for those garden crops here in the Midwest, and so there will be products available that are fresh out of the field. So get out and support your farmer's market. That's your money on 720 WGN.
12:48 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is WGN Radio, and on phone line now is John Kadunas. He is the CEO of Calamos Investments. John, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN Radio today. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I believe this is the first time you and I have spoken. I'm just looking at some of your background. We've seen you at CNN, Fox Business, CNBC, Bloomberg TV. You're an expert on global capital markets. I want to talk to you a little bit about this coalition that has announced a sort of telethon for the Chicago area. But before we get to that, just tell me a little bit about what you're seeing and thinking globally, or maybe personally for people. I know those are two ends of the extreme, but what are you seeing on the business side for people's investments relative to this COVID crisis?
Sure. I'm currently the CEO of Calamos Investments, where we're a money manager that specializes in different types of strategies. One of them that we've used for over 40 years has been convertibles, some of the strategies as of late have been liquid alternatives that have worked really well under these conditions, and we've been known to be pretty fantastic risk managers. We also have a wealth management arm that we get to see what some of our clients, mom and pop, are seeing. And what we're seeing and what I'm seeing both at the granular level and the global level, John, is that, you know, the markets are truly leading and are much more optimistic than the actual economy, and that tends to have a lot to do with forward earnings and expectations and how forward they are. And so that's why we've seen a decent amount of recovery so far in terms of the markets. If we're to predict, which is very difficult to do, I think that there needs to be a particular event, whether we can find some kind of drug that will help us slow down the process of COVID, or a vaccine for everything to start to get closer to a normalcy. Until then, we're seeing volatility, but most of our clients are staying with the markets, and we're asking them, and it's been a good advice, not to sell when it was really, really down, and so that way they were able to participate when it's come back.
My guess is this would be the worst time to sell. Do you think that the market has bottomed out, or are we going to have another dip?
It's hard to tell as we reopen the country whether we get a second relapse, and so then all bets are off in terms of the markets. If we don't, I think we've seen the worst of it, but that doesn't mean we won't have event-driven risk, and the volatility will continue. More of a W type of recovery, mm-hmm. till we have that event where we can have a little point to something where there's a little bit more conviction,
yeah.
And then maybe not quite a V shape, but a U or type of recovery. I think we can see. There's clearly going to be businesses that are not going to be able to recover. Having said that, there will be other businesses and new jobs created because of this too. So I'm a little bit optimistic, but also realistic that it's gonna take a lot to get going. But the resiliency of humankind, especially the American people, we will see here, and I think the recovery will be fairly robust.
Well, robust is a funny word, isn't it? Because if it takes a long time, then maybe that's not robust. But if we get back to 29,000, say, on the Dow, or similar levels on the NASDAQ, et cetera, then I think we'll all be, everybody's for that. And I guess the question is, what's the horizon for that? Do you have any feel for that?
Like I said, I think that the markets will definitely lead versus the economy because of the optimism.
Three years, 5 years? Okay.
No, I don't think that it's going to take that long. I think that we're fortunate enough where, in having some insight to the White House in terms of the vaccines, they have several out there right now, approximately 20 that they feel very confident in. Now, when they can release them after a ton of phase one, which is on animals, and phase two on humans, the president was on today, hoping to get it by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Some of the experts tell me, probably Q1. But either case, as long as we can get some kind of traction by then, I think that towards the end of middle and end of 2021, we'll be pretty close to the highs again in the markets.
It sounds like a sell order. No, a buy order on your part then.
Well, you know, we're optimistic, cautiously optimistic, and for the most part, we are hoping for, and there has never been a movement of such, both the government and private business to try to come up with a cure and vaccine,
right,
like we've seen. And I'm optimistic that we have a lot of brilliant people working on it. We'll come up with something sooner rather than later. And of course, if it extends a lot worse than my predictions, then, you know, the repercussions will be worse on the market.
Understood. So I'm reading now the Chicago CEO COVID-19 Coalition. There is such a thing. The Chicago CEO COVID-19 Coalition, founded by you, John Kadunas, is excited to announce that Wintrust Financial and CineSpace Chicago Studios have joined your firm, Kalamos Investments, as founding circle members. There is an event called Sweet Home Chicago, a telethon to feature a special appearance by, among others, Mike Ditka, George Wendt. It's actually a pretty star-studded event that's going to take place this weekend. It's something that folks will be able to watch online, right?
That is correct. Well, they can watch it online and also NBC Sports, but it'd be amiss for me not to mention Hightower Advisors, who also joined us in the founding circle, as well as many, many great other firms that are Chicago-based and also have big Chicago presence, like Grosvenor and PNC and Republic Bank and Sterling Bay and Mesero and Madison Dearborn, Northern Trust, CIBC, UBS even as part of, just to name a few. So we're really, really excited about our sponsors and benefactors and also our partners in the sports in terms of the Reinsdorf family has been fantastic, the Chicago Bulls, the White Sox, the Blackhawks, Chicago Bears, everybody's has participated in this, and which we're really, really proud to see the business leaders come together in order to help our people.
Well, and this is amazing. So this is Saturday at 5 o'clock. Musical
correct
performances by Common, Jeff Tweedy, Chicago. The appearances include Horace Grant, Buddy Guy, Israel Adonijay, Fergie Jenkins, Patrick Kane, Tim Kazurinsky, Tony Kukoc, Zach LaVine, Joe Madden, Jenny McCarthy, Ryan Sandberg, Brian Urlacher, Donnie Wahlberg. It's really a kind of a who's who of Chicago entertainment and sports, all making appearances, plus special musical performances, including the Chicago Children's Choir. And this is going to take place. You can watch it at NBCSports.com or NBC Sports. You can also watch it online, and that's going to be Saturday at 5 p.m., right?
That is correct. That is correct.
Wow. Okay. And then we'll be asked to make a donation while we're watching it, correct?
Well, that's the whole plan of it. It pains me to see our fellow Chicagoans. I was born and raised in Chicago, and I love this city. And for those of us, especially in the business community, that can come together to rally, to put this together for our city. But the main idea and objective is to raise as much money as we can for four particular focused areas, such as food, the homelessness, the community and mental health services, and, of course, PPE. And we've picked out 10 fantastic charities that the money's going to go 100% straight through to all of those.
Wow.
That, you know, we are hoping that to raise as much as we can to make an impact now.
I want to just sprint through those. Chicago Community COVID-19 Response Fund, the 100 Club of Chicago, the Knight Ministry. Brenda and I love that organization. The Salvation Army we're supporters of, the Greater Chicago Food Depository, Metropolitan Family Services, Greek Orthodox Metropolis, Catholic Charities, the Jewish United Fund, Howard Brown Health. What a great batch of Chicago you've got covered there. What a great batch of people you've got entertaining us Saturday night at 5. John Kadunas, good job. My best to everybody. Thanks for coming on, and thanks for putting this together.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And stay safe, everybody.